It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 164 of Radio TCX.
Your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray. And this week we are continuing our coverage of the Denver System Open, particularly talking about, you know, the player on Radio TCX who actually can play well.
This week we brought on John McDermott to talk about his experience making it all the way to top eight at the Denver System Open. He flew an ace list there, so it was really great talking to John, though. He's a really fun guy, and this was the first chance he actually got to be on the show, not as a guest host, but actually as just a regular old guest, so we had some fun with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's not keep John waiting. Let's get right to it.
All right, so this is kind of a weird setup we've got going on right now because I am sitting in the same room physically as John here, John McDermott. Carson is still in Denver, though, so we've never done this setup before where, like, two of us are in the same space and one of us is in a remote location. So it's kind of a weird
experience. Imagine my Force ghost right there next to you.
I imagine that every time we record, though. He haunts me
weird.
Late into the night. It's bizarre. John, thank you for coming on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me back as an actual guest.
Yes, and it's such a fun perspective to actually talk to you as a guest and not just to abuse your free labor for covering when Carson can't be on the show.
It's always a pleasure.
Well, yeah. I want to keep calling you a host because that way we can say that, Radio TCX is still good at X-Wing.
Yes. Yeah, we're really good at claiming people when they do perform well at tournaments. So I think that's going to be another case of that here. Though you had been on our show several times before you succeeded. So you made top eight at the Denver System Open. Denver System Open was the end of April there, April 27th, 28th. Carson and I had winning records. We didn't do so great. We talked about that in last week's episode, so we don't need to go any more into
that.
I
need to stop playing on stream. It seems to be a curse.
It's crippling you every time you
epically lose.
But you ended up making top eight, which was really cool. It was a pretty tough field there, 170 players. Did you have a fun time at Denver?
Absolutely. I'd say it was the first time I'd ever traveled for a major X-Wing event. I'd played in Worlds the last 2 years when you just had to button mash or enter raffle and get lucky. But I think playing at Denver this past, weekend or whatever, was the most fun I've ever had playing X-Wing.
I think the button mashing for Worlds was the most successful I've been in X-Wing or anything X-Wing related.
Never, I was so good at that.
It never failed me.
Click and refresh.
But before we dive too far into Denver, I guess we should talk a little bit about you, John, as a player, because we haven't covered that much when you've guest hosted on the show. So can you tell us, obviously you're really well into second edition now, but you started in first edition. How long have you been playing X-Wing?
Sure. So I started playing, I think, whenever the Force Awakens core set came out. So that would have been winter 2015, 2016,
yep.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it was right before the movie, right? Because it was right before the movie released in 2015, I think, The Force Awakens. That
sure.
September, I think, and then we saw the December release.
So call it that season, whatever you want to call that season, was kind of when I started. I'd been picking up ships periodically and just kind of, looking at them and having them sit on my desk, but I hadn't really played much. We'd call that like 4 years, maybe?
Sure thing. Yeah, sure. Were you a big Star Wars fan before X-Wing?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I had, posters, t-shirts, the whole kit and caboodle. The game was just the icing on the cake.
I mean, and I think it seems like that would be an assumed answer, but I've actually talked to people who really like X-Wing and didn't really get into Star Wars until after they started playing the game, which I find is really fascinating because that was definitely my draw, looking at those awesome pre-painted models.
All right, so you started 4 years ago. What's kept you going with the game? What keeps you coming back? What makes X-Wing stand out as a game to you?
Sure. So one of the things that I think I love the most about X-Wing is the community around the game. I've met so many just amazing people, through first edition and second edition. I made some really good friends. And I think one of the things about the community that really keeps me coming back to the game is kind of my drive to make it a good place for new people to come and play the game. I have way more fun bringing a new player in and teaching them about the game and about rules than I think I have playing the game myself.
Yeah, and I think we can all definitely relate too, because you know, when we were each getting into the game initially, it was the community that really enabled us to pursue it. Because, I mean, for the most part, when you start playing X-Wing, I think it's probably true for most of us that you're just not very good at it. It really takes time to learn the ins and the outs and like just kind of the core structure of the game so that you can understand it and start to succeed. And I think having a really strong community, a really positive community that welcomes new players, helps all those people who would be good X-Wing players actually stick around long enough to like discover their skill and get really good at the game.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that kept me coming back in first edition specifically was just the fact that I'm like hyper competitive. And so when I started out just as complete trash, like I had to keep playing and get good and, you know, win games and just keep building up my skill as a player. So, but that's definitely changed now with second edition, having kind of played enough, and it's more important to me now to get more people into the game.
Now, did you feel like when you made the switch into second edition, I think it hit a lot of us players who've been playing for a long time, like you kind of had to relearn the game. Did you feel like there was a big relearning process for you going into second edition, or did you feel like the transition was pretty smooth?
I think for me, the transition was smooth just because, I mean, from first edition to second edition, I have a very particular play style and kind of an archetype that I like, and it wasn't too hard to readjust that play style.
So a lot of people, you know, play X-Wing, and there's a decent amount of players who are pretty good. What, you know, skills or skill do you possess that you think gives you an edge against other X-Wing players?
Sure. So, it's kind of funny because I always tell people that I never played sports that involved balls because I have like no spatial awareness and I can't catch anything.
Sure.
So that's why I was a runner. But I definitely think my strongest skill in X-Wing is my like visual spatial awareness of the board. One of the things that I did when I started playing is I'd just set up a mat and I'd put, you know, like 12 obstacles and I would just fly ships. Just, you know, even alone, just to get a feel for where any combination of movements would put me. So whether that's like a straight boost, bank boost, hard boost, or barrel roll, whatever it was. And I kind of just hammered that in as hard as I could. So I'd say like well over 90% of the time I can look at the board and pretty much know where any maneuver is going to put me. And I think that's a really good skill to have in this game.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredibly important. And I think it's one of those skills in X-Wing where, I mean, obviously X-Wing combines a lot of different skill sets, good understanding of probability and card interactions. But a lot of those you could understand like on paper, like you could get that from a technical standpoint of reading. The actual spatial reasoning skill that you kind of hone and develop really comes through repetition of playing the game over and over again. It's like you have to get in so many game reps before you really understand like the simple math of it. Like, oh, I know where a small base will go on a too hard turn here. I know if my medium base is going to hit that rock on a bank. And knowing those things and being able to approach that with a certainty where I know I can land this maneuver opens up so many more gameplay options for you, where you don't have to play cautiously just because you're uncertain about whether the corner of your base is going to clip over that asteroid.
Yep, absolutely.
Right, and I think a good understanding there does lead to more ace play where you can be more reactive, because I think, you know, with efficiency builds, like you can do some formation squadron flying and you don't really have, you know, once you put in the initial reps there, you don't really have to think too much about setting those maneuvers, but if you're having to think on the fly and put yourself in new unique positions, that's where I think, you know, having a really good understanding of that spatial realization can really separate you from the crowd.
Now, John, one question that we always ask guests on this show, and you haven't actually been able to answer it yet because we always had you guest hosting, so there wasn't a good interview opportunity. And we've kind of updated this for second edition now because it's a little different now. But we always like to ask our guests, which talent upgrade card or force power upgrade card best represents your play style and why?
This one's tough because I have the answer I want to give and then I have like the obligatory answer. But I think I'm going to go with outmaneuver. Just because I'm such a fan of ace play, my advantage is going to come from being able to move around my opponent, deny them shots while making sure that I still have arc. But based on my Denver performance, I'd have to go with hate the force powers because I hate the rebel faction as an Empire player. So I channeled that even though I didn't play a rebel list in the top 16. But definitely outmaneuver. I love that card. It's really good on Soontir, and he's one of my favorite ships right now. So that's probably my firm answer.
Well, and you really dedicated yourself to ace play. That's been the archetype you've carried over from first edition, and it's the one that took you into the top eight at the Denver System Open. So let's talk a little bit about your experience at the Denver System Open. First off, can you tell us the list you flew for that event?
Sure. So I took Imperial Aces. I had Darth Vader in the TIE Advanced with Fire Control System, Soontir Fel in the TIE Interceptor with Predator, and Whisper in the TIE Phantom with Juke and Advanced Sensors.
And this list comes out to 190 points, I think?
Yep, 10-point bid.
Okay, so can you tell us a little bit about why you chose this list for Denver? Because a lot of the boogeyman list people were afraid of, things like the ultra-efficient Fat Han list with Kanan Jarrus and inertial dampeners, as well as the uber-efficient four Phantom lists, most of which have Juke. Why would you choose an ace list when they can struggle with those particularly scary lists?
Sure. So I had to think a lot about this one, and the decision to fly this list actually came about a week before we left for Denver. I really like playing lists in X-Wing that challenge me. I think it would have been really easy to default to, you know, your hyper efficiency like quad phantoms, and this might be the unpopular opinion, but I don't feel like there's much of a challenge there. As an ace player, I don't think it would be too hard to fly. I've seen people pick it up and play a first game with it and do really well. And I just feel the most comfortable with aces, you know, having options to, you know, go fast, move around people, bug out when I need to. I just really like those options, and I think aces really give me those best opportunities to do those things.
So you think making it a little harder on yourself makes you play better, kind of?
Absolutely.
Puts you in the danger zone mindset.
Yeah, I think critical decision-making is really important in this game, and with aces, you have, like, almost every turn is a critical decision, so I just like that challenge that it presents to me, and the payoff is huge when it works.
Well, right, every turn
is talking about. Soontir does a two-turn every game. Every turn.
Every round, just a two-turn barrel roll. Well, I think the critical decisions thing is important, and I think that's what scares a lot of people away from ace lists, is that, you know, when you're running the efficiency list, even just, you know, the five-hit point phantoms, like, you could make a mistake and take three damage on a phantom, and you'll probably be able to recover. Like, you'll have options there. Whereas if you make a mistake and you throw Soontir out there, doesn't get the Soontir bullseye trigger, and you just take some damage, you might just get popped in one turn and lose a third of your list.
Oh, for sure. But if anyone can testify to this, it's Paul Olson. Soontir will natty out every time, I promise.
That's that Paul Nelson skill.
That's right.
All right, so the other element of your list here is that large bid. You went to 190, so you had a 10-point bid. I mean, you have two initiative sixes, Vader and Soontir, plus Whisper at five, all who enjoy being able to reposition, especially since you have advanced sensors on Whisper. So why you took the bid is not that interesting, because obviously being able to leverage your repositioning is a big advantage. I want to see, you know, getting to that large bid, that's kind of a struggle in list building. What were the tough choices you had to make? What got cut to get to that big bid?
Sure. So before I had actually even realized that I could fit these three together, I was flying Vader with Hate and Afterburners on there as well. And then instead of Predator on Soontir, I had Outmaneuver, Shield Upgrade, and Stealth Device. And then I was flying Duchess as my I-5 with Crackshot. So it was really hard for me to get away from all of those defensive boosts for Soontir specifically, just because he's three hull. I mean, he can pop really easily. So getting rid of those things and going to just Predator was a tough one for me. It wasn't a doubt in my mind to drop Hate on Vader for sure. I didn't miss it in a single one of my games in Denver. And while Afterburners is nice, it can make Vader really fast and he can do those great moves, I didn't feel like with the other two ships in the list that he absolutely needed it. So I guess that's kind of where my head was at.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really good insight.
Have you considered putting Lone Wolf on Soontir?
Nope.
No? You know, because I see a lot of people switching to that.
Ah, come on. It's the best card.
Not really, just because I feel like you want to capitalize on his bullseye ability so much. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, if you have to do, you know, an evade barrel roll or an evade boost and just to get that extra defensive roll. Let's just say for some reason you don't get that focus, which, you know, wouldn't happen if you're lining up the bullseye anyway. But he's usually close enough to the other two ships in the list anyway, where Lone Wolf's probably not going to trigger. I don't want to leave Soontir out to dry entirely just because he is kind of the most squishy ship in this list. But yeah, Predator's good on Soontir. Extra mod.
Now, between these three ships, Vader, Soontir, and Whisper, do you have one that you really like to fly? Like, that's your favorite to fly, even when you're flying them all together?
Oh, yeah. I love Darth Vader. He's my favorite Star Wars character. The TIE Advanced is my favorite ship in second edition. And in maybe not in first edition. It's better now. But, yeah, Darth Vader's my boy. Definitely my favorite of these three. He can put the paint on. He can take some hits for a couple turns, and he's just a really good piece in this list.
All right, so obviously you made top eight. You had a very good run with this list, did very well. What was one of your biggest challenges during the weekend? Kind of what was your toughest matchup?
Yeah, so I think honestly rolling up to table one, that matchup was the scariest that I had. It was a six-ship rebel list. It was three Z-95s, two double-tapping Y-ons, and then a Leia U-Wing. And I feel like usually against Rebel Beef, with three ships, I feel pretty good going against four. But six arcs is a lot to dodge. And my opponent's probably going to get, you know, a decent number of shots off. Like, half the list is probably going to shoot at me. So I have to think really hard about where they're going to go, especially with Leia. Makes the decision a lot harder. But being able to arc dodge, or in certain cases, knowing when not to arc dodge and maybe taking a forced bump, you know, with Soontir or with Whisper, just to get, you know, optimized shots or to get that free focus with Soontir. It's really hard to do that against six ships just because there's so many different opportunities for my opponent to have to block me or shoot me. So that one definitely, I think, scared me the most. But I was glad to get it out of the way in the first game.
Yeah, I think that's kind of funny, too, where, you know, you won that match, right?
Yep.
It was kind of funny that the scariest matchup for you doesn't end up being the one that takes you down. It's those other matchups where you do have a chance, but then, you know, it just, things don't turn out your way, or your opponent's really good and counters your play. I just think that's a cool part of X-Wing. Like, the thing that scares you isn't necessarily the thing that's going to knock you out.
Right. Hate makes you stronger.
Hate makes you stronger. Now, if you didn't fly Vader, Soontir, Whisper, is there like a runner-up list you were looking at? Or like, what were you playing with before this event that you thought about taking?
So I was having a lot of fun and success with actually just four Republic arcs. All the I2s, had one with Commander Cody and three with Seventh Fleet Gunner, because that list can just run up and punch you in the face super hard. I mean, you can control so much of the board with it because you have eight arcs.
Right.
And you can just fan out. You can stick together. With Seventh Fleet Gunner, you're going to get three four dice shots, you know, at range two or range three, and that's pretty scary to fly against, I think. I mean, plus it's 36 health to chew through. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of fun with that list. I considered it a little bit, but ultimately the ace play was what drew me in, so I stuck with that.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of the arcs too, obviously, and having those giant guns there, you still get scared about just having something get arc dodged or pilot skill killed, and once you lose one of those arcs, it'll start spiraling out of control for you pretty quickly. Especially if they've got, you know, even just some good initiative four pilots there, can just tear you apart.
Absolutely. And in a meta of a lot of I4s, I felt like I2 just wasn't quite good enough with my play style anyway. So had to bump up to those sixes and five.
So you had a really good run in Denver, but let's talk a little bit more broadly. Right now, I think a lot of what's defining the X-Wing metagame, at least around here in the States, is efficiency lists. So lists that depend on ships that are super cost effective, either for how many attack dice they have or how many hit points they have. I think Quad Phantoms is a good example of kind of the peak efficiency list right now. And we saw the most of the lists at the Denver Top 16 were what I'd call either straight up efficiency list, bunch of Quad Phantoms, or they were kind of a mid-range list where they had an ace like Darth Vader and then paired up with some just really efficient low initiative ships. Why do you think there was such a small representation from ace lists in the top 16? There were probably only like two, maybe three lists that you'd really call a true ace list where they didn't depend on those efficient phantoms.
Sure. So it's a combination of a couple different things. Obviously, for the system open, you want to get that top eight finish so you get your world's invite. As far as the efficiency kind of meta goes, it's always easier to make the safe decision, which is what Quad Phantoms or Rebel Beef would be. and kind of like what I highlighted before, it's more challenging for me to fly three aces in a format like this. So it drives me to really fly better. But not everyone kind of shares that sentiment. Like I said, it's easier to do the safe thing. So that's probably why you see more of those four ship, five ship, or super heavy beef lists in a top 16 cut at a tournament like this. And part of it too with ace play is that high risk, high reward payoff, where, you know, in an efficiency meta, the risk is higher, I think, to fly three kind of low health ships, but with good agility, good offensive output. So that payoff when you get it is really good.
Right. I mean, you can win some of your games pretty easily with aces, but getting that five win threshold in a long tournament is pretty difficult.
Well, and it puts a lot of pressure on you. Like you're saying, it is difficult to fly because the burden's on you to not make the mistakes there. Aces are inherently have that built in where you really can't make a lot of mistakes because they'll just come up and blow up in your face, literally. Do you feel like when you're playing this ace list, especially against the like rebel four ship, rebel lists, beef lists, whatever you want to call them, is there a certain game state you're looking for going into that? Because that archetype generally has a lot of similarities, two B-wings and an X and a U, or a Y and X and two Bs, stuff like that. Is there a game state or like an initial goal you go for when you start those matchups?
Sure. So I think my main goal, and this is usually probably towards either the mid game or I'd say maybe like the last third of the game, is to get my opponent into a spot where if they do have all their ships left, there's going to be one turn where they just have really terrible maneuver options. Say they don't have Leia, or they're inside the obstacles, or maybe they're in a corner, and they're going to have to just put themselves in a terrible position, you know, maybe for the next turn or two turns ahead. And I can really capitalize on that turn and arc dodge or get in there with the aces and just put the hammer down and get some damage in. And that's one of those turns where maybe I take a little bit more of a risk and put all of them at range one just to get that damage output in. But that's the turn where it can really determine how well the game's going to go for me. You know, if it's removing a ship or even two ships off the board and maybe taking two damage in return.
Yeah, I really think that's one of the difficulties of flying ace lists, because ace lists really depend on just dealing damage over time and then knowing that right moment to converge and, you know, put a lot of effort in and maybe put yourself at a significant risk in order to start finishing things off. And I think that's a lot of the skill of a good ace player, is knowing that balance there where, like, what are the turns where I need to play defensively, run away, and what are the turns where, okay, this is my moment, got to set up that kill box and start removing pieces.
All right, do you have any other tips for players picking up aces?
Sure. So I think the one thing that I would, you know, caution people towards, and this also kind of, you know, maybe answers the question, what are some of the mistakes you see ace players make? With ships like these, you never want to overcommit, especially early in the game, because it's going to be a lot easier for a four ship or efficiency list to take out one of your aces if you overcommit and get yourself in a bad spot. And some examples of that might be Whisper doesn't have a good decloak the next turn, or Soontir didn't get that bullseye and doesn't have a focus and Predator reroll, or maybe Vader wasn't able to get the target lock for some reason. So you always want to play it kind of close to the chest. You want to get your opponent to commit to something before you commit to something. That way you know exactly where they're going to go. You have your options with your repositions. With Whisper, you have advanced sensors. You can get that, you know, advanced sensors focus and then force a bump, and that's one less ship that's going to shoot at you. So, you know, play cautious, but to that effect, you can't play too cautiously because you're going to have to do damage. With an ace list going against efficiency lists, you're probably not going to have more dice if you have to go to the final salvo. So having decisions, yeah, right.
Especially with ships like Vader, who don't even... he just has two red dice, right?
Right. So going into a final salvo, I'm going to have eight dice, and that's not where I want to be. So I have to get at least one ship off the board. But yeah, definitely don't overcommit. Play it safe, but know when the turns are to definitely go in and get the nail in with that hammer.
Well, and to that point, though, are there any common mistakes that you see either new ace players or just ace players in general make that you're really good at capitalizing on?
Yeah, so definitely, let's just say, for example, I have the bid and that person's aces are going to move before mine. I've seen people get really confident with setting up a kill box, and then you just don't fly into that kill box, and then you have shots and they don't, and then they just get deflated. The thing with aces is, I'd say for the most part, you're going to be able to come out of that turn relatively okay. So don't get in your own head, like play it through. You know, if you have to bug out for a turn, do that. That's okay. Regroup, come back, hit that damage in, you know, turn three, turn four, that's okay. Also, like, don't fly towards an obstacle. Like, don't fly straight at a rock, because an ace is not going to come out of a rock, okay? Especially Soon Tier with only three health. If he's going to fly over a rock and take a damage, like, that's a huge advantage your opponent has on you now, because you have to fly Soon Tier totally different when he's got damage on him.
I like your point, too, about not shutting down after you, you know, maybe make a mistake or things don't go your way. I think that's just good advice in general for X-Wing, where you don't want to, like, mentally concede the game before the game is actually decided, because you can find yourself in some pretty dire circumstances where, oh, no, I made a maneuver. I'm not going to be able to get shots for a couple turns. Still focus on, like, okay, what can I do? How can I play the best here, get out of this, and get back into a position? Because, you know, the game still has a dice element to it. There's still some chance. Your opponent can still make mistakes. So you always want to be evaluating, all right, what's my win condition now? What are the goals I need to pursue now that things haven't gone my way? So I think you can fall into this spiral, like go on tilt where, okay, I screwed up or something went really bad swing of the dice. And then that'll just impact the rest of your game, where you'll then definitely lose, because it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You've decided you're going to lose this game, so then you will lose this game.
Right. And I've definitely been guilty of this too. Like, I've fallen into the trap of like having super hot dice, but and then just, you know, getting really confident and you're going to have a really good turn. As an ace player, you like absolutely cannot depend on your dice. You have to depend on your maneuvering and your positioning to get that optimal shot, get the best defense you can. I mean, if that means going through a gas cloud next turn, then do it, because you're going to get that free evade on defense. So, but never, as an ace player, never rely on your dice unless you have super good mods, which, I mean, Vader does, and Whisper usually does too, but yeah, you still can't count on that, because you could blank out, and then that turn is not going to go your way every time.
All right, John, so before we let you go, we thought we'd hit some just broad questions about X-Wing here, because we've got a lot to look forward to in the next several months. A big question, I think, that's kind of on a lot of people's minds right now, we've now found out that all the Grand Championship level X-Wing events are going to be the extended format. We know Worlds is going to be the extended format, and that's created kind of a rift in the X-Wing community. A lot of people are not excited about that. Do you have a format preference for X-Wing right now? Do you like extended? Do you prefer hyperspace?
Sure. So if you had asked me a month and a half ago, the answer would have been hyperspace without a doubt.
Sure.
After playing at Denver in the last couple weeks of practice and whatever, I'm definitely enjoying extended more. I feel like hyperspace has kind of fallen into a, kind of a stale meta. We're seeing a lot of those efficiency rebel lists. And again, like, I just hate the rebel faction. So definitely seeing that variety in extended has really kind of invigorated me for the game a bit more.
Yeah, I think I echo that. I was a little less excited going into the extended meta game, but after playing it all weekend, I thought it was really exciting, and I was, you know, excited to see some new breakout lists. You know, Major Vinder doing very well. That's a really fun ship. And seeing that, you know, the meta list that we were kind of worried about not doing as well, I thought that was really refreshing.
Now, we are on the cusp of a Wave 4 release. We've got Wave 5 already announced coming out in the future. Are there any ships from either of those waves that you're particularly excited about?
I think just in general, having more options for the new factions. So both Republic and Separatists. We've got the Hyena Bomber and the Naboo Starfighter coming out. And then in Wave 5, we've got the Nantex-class Starfighter and the Republic Y-Wing. Just going to bring some more options to those factions. Give them more available, you know, budget aces, you know, munition carriers, things like that for those factions. So I think that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm definitely pumped for that Naboo Starfighter there. I like, after seeing their live stream too and just seeing some of the pilot abilities, I think it's going to be pretty exciting.
I mean, what's not to love about a free evade?
All right, so we also have a points adjustment coming in July, which seems like a little ways away, but it's definitely on my mind. So with that in mind, what areas of the game do you think most need some attention coming the next points adjustment.
Sure. So I think one of the big things to think about is the things that are really good and extended right now. With the next couple waves, thinking about what is going to become hyperspace legal. So I guess the biggest example of that would be like your Fat Han, Handbrake Han builds. Pretty soon they're going to be in hyperspace too. People are going to be flying them. So thinking about how those cards interact with each other, you know, for example, inertial dampeners in Kanan, you know, slight point adjustments can make decision-making in a list really important. So I think seeing what happens in July can really shake up the meta in terms of what's dominating and what's not. So I think it'll be interesting to see how they balance out the factions, especially with the addition of these two new ones. I mean, because obviously their goal is to make the most options playable that they can so sure. people are enjoying the game. So it's hard to speculate. I guess we're going to have to see how the meta looks in the next month or so, which could determine how they do that points adjustment. So I guess we'll see in July.
Right. If the things that are scaring everybody right now aren't doing that well, then do they even need a point adjustment, I guess, is the big question.
Right.
All right. So before we let you go, John, do you have any shout outs you want to give?
Yeah. So I'd like to just give a couple shout outs to the crew at the Woodbury Gaming Goat. They definitely helped me practice the most going into Denver. Giving me advice and encouraging me. I've been playing with those guys a lot. Really enjoy that group over there. And now Paul Olson and Sean Cardell, both from that group, have Worlds invites as well. So that'll be really exciting. And then just a shout out to the Denver crew. Yourself, Carson, Tim, Tim Sturm, and Vic. Had a great time with you guys, and I look forward to playing with you more in the future.
Right on. Yeah, it was a super fun weekend. Thanks for being on the show, John.
Yeah, thanks again for having me, guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was fun.
We need someone to make us look good.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to Facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please consider going on to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a written comment saying what you like about the show and why others would be interested in listening.
If you want to support the show directly, please consider going on to patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us.
Again, guys, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Thank you, John McDermott, for coming on the show, and we will talk to you next week.